From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 17th day of January 2018. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Vakes from Stuart Peterson. A bit later in the program, we'll check in on one of the presenters that will be here in Illinois at the Pork Expo in Springfield next month, from a veterinary clinic out of Minnesota that's been working with South Dakota State and Kansas State on PED, that's the porcine epidemic diarrhea, that impacted the hog herd in the United States so very harshly a few years back. And their discussion will surround whether that may have come in on some feedstuffs from foreign countries. As we wrap up our time together today, we'll take a look at the weather forecast too. Drew Lerner will be here from World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
This is the Closing Market Report for Wednesday afternoon. Jackie Vakes from Stuart Peterson now joins us to take a look at the marketplace. Hey, Jackie, thanks so much for being with us today. Let's get started maybe with some technicals in the marketplace, and then I want to hear what you thought about last week's USDA World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimates and the crop production reports and all those things, too. So first, some of the technical things. Where do we stand today?
Well, you know, when you look at March corn, basically we've got some pretty strong resistance up at 358.5. That's a 100-day moving average. We haven't been above that since August 10th of 2017. And support sitting at 348. Today we've spent a lot of time hanging right around the 50-day moving average, trying to see if we can't push our way through it. And, you know, it's just been difficult. It's interesting to see today because today suddenly we've got corn up and beans down. Yesterday we had beans up and corn down. You know, so to me, I think that there's an awful lot of spreading going on at this point in time. Nobody feels confident about the direction of the market. When you look at March beans, there we've got an interesting scenario. We've got resistance at 970, 979, 986. And you hear a lot of farmers saying, well, I'm going to sell when it gets to 990. And I hate to be a bearer of ugly news, but boy, I'll tell you what, that if 986 is sitting in there, you'll be lucky if we see 990, unless something really changes. We've got support at 964, and you know, those have really hung in there, and they've really been strong places that the market just doesn't know what it really wants at this point. It's early in the year.
So what it wants and what it gets are two different things sometimes, I suppose.
Oh, don't we know that?
Farmers would like something higher. However, USDA last week when they released the numbers came in pretty much on tap with what the trade was thinking, at least for soybeans, at the 470 million bushel carryout. What do you think of all the numbers that were released and the updates that they did to acreage and to yields both?
Yeah, I that's where I want to start. I want to start out with the acreage and the yields. I thought it was very interesting. You know, there was a lot of talk before the report that we were going to actually see the bean number go higher and the corn number go lower, and we did just the opposite. We lost 200,000 acres on area planted, and we actually lost 400,000 acres on the area harvested, and therefore it pushed the yield up to 176.6 compared to December's 175.4. Makes sense. When you lose that additional harvested acres, that obviously is poorer quality, and therefore it pushes that yield higher. When we looked at beans, we lost 100,000 on planted area, stayed the same on harvested, and then lost 0.4 of a bushel, went down to 49.1 from 49.5. So, you know, that leads us right into what you were talking about. You know, you look at 470 million at this point compared to 302 million last year at this point. It certainly doesn't bode well in some respects, and yet, you know, we do have really excellent demand. There's no question about that. On the corn side of things, you know, we saw the carryout go up 40 million, and I thought that was actually pretty respectable when you looked at the fact that we were only at production of 14,578 compared to ending production of 14,604. You know, it gives us that extra in there. And they did reduce feed by 25 million, but they raised crush, you know, so they kind of offset things. all the way around. We did end up with a higher stocks-to-use ratio at 17.1%, in contrast to last year where we were sitting at 15.7. So, you know, the general picture for corn and beans, it's a situation, I guess, where I think back, and this tells you how old I am, but I think back to the late 90s, and we saw this type of action in the late 90s. We moved into a period where the trading ranges became much less wide, and therefore it was more difficult, you know, for being able to grab onto opportunity. When you looked at wheat, now wheat was the opposite situation. Last year we had a carryout of 1.1 billion, and this year we ended up at 989 million. And so, you know, it's just very, very interesting. And the world levels followed, you know, right along with it, Todd. You know, when you looked at the entire thing, carryout went up from December's on corn from 204 to 206. But the interesting part was last year at this time at the world level, we were at 228. So we have a significantly less corn at the world level than we did last year. Beans, opposite of that, we were at 96.5 last year. We're at 98.5 right now. And on the wheat side, 252 last year, 268 this year. So even though in the U.S. we saw a smaller wheat carryout number, at the world level we saw a larger wheat carryout number. So, you know, that I think when you looked at the big picture, the market was surprised by the fact that we lowered the beans and raised the corn, but you can only get so much speed out of that. You know, and I think that's what you're looking at. You see the market, and you see traders take a position of beginning to spread and reduce their risk, basically. Now, grain stocks, you know, I'm always on to grain stocks because I want to see how much is still left on the farm. And this year we have 62% on the farm compared to 61.4 last year, you know, a slightly higher number. And beans, 47% compared to 46%. So beans are actually below the 50% level, which is a, you know, it's a good thing. When the commercial has at least 50% in control, you begin to tip more to, well, I always tell clients, you know, how you want the highest price when you're selling it. Okay, that's the same thing when the commercial has a majority of the crop, they want the highest price. So it reduces, doesn't mean you're not going to go down. It just gives you a little stronger bottom, basically, is what it is.
What about Brazil? What are you hearing there?
Well, unfortunately, and that's one thing on the USDA report. That's the only thing they changed, actually, was the Brazilian production. They went up to 110 million metric tons. And wouldn't you know it, Brazil just increased it to 111 million metric tons. And, you know, the general attitude down there is that it's very likely that we could reach another record level of 114 million metric tons before we're actually all done. Harvest down there is running about 10 to 15 days behind, you know, and that's primarily because, you know, they were so dry during the planting period, so it was delayed at that point in time. Mato Grosso actually is 1.2% harvested, and I think that, you know, that's going to pick up. Our biggest pressure, okay, because we have to remember that the Brazilian farmers sitting on crop too, is probably going to start to come when we get into late January and definitely by the time we're into mid-February. Now, they did some research on this soybean moratorium that they've got, you know, which is basically a situation where they don't want them double cropping beans, primarily because of rust, but also because of the fact that they want to reduce the pressure to deforest more land in the Amazon, you know, in order to increase their grain production. This is a collective effort between environmentalists, producers, grain companies, grain processors, and basically the government. And so the companies that are involved, which I think is really interesting because, you know, we have grain processors and grain companies involved, have agreed not to finance or purchase any grain that's produced in areas where it was illegally cleared after 2008. So they really know how to put the pressure on, I can tell you that much, as far as how things go down there. I know when Jeff and I were down there, that was 2006, and the environmentalists are definitely big drivers as to what happens down in Brazil.
What about Argentina? Their crop has suffered a lot this year. What are you hearing from them?
Well, you know, basically, the corn in Argentina now is about 85.8% planted. That comes out of Buenos Aires Grain Exchange. Basically, when you look at the bigger picture, some of the corn that was planted early on is actually filling grain already or is already physically mature. Can you believe that? You know, but the province of Entre Rios, it has had the driest January so far in 15 years. Can you imagine? And part of their problem that they've got is, you know, that the fact that where it's really lagging in terms of their planting is up in the northern part. You know, they're way ahead on some of the southern areas, but it's improved compared to what it was. It doesn't look as if it's going to be as dire as they thought it was going to be. And, you know, one of the things I forgot to mention on Brazil, it just came to my head, you know, when we talk about the environmentalists down there, you know, and we talk about, from our perspective, we look at how much more can Brazil actually expand. Currently, only 7% of the land in Brazil is actually in agriculture. And if you compare that to us, we have 17% in agriculture. You know, so there's certainly some tremendous potential down there, like we talk all the time.
Hey, it is always good to talk with you. You usually have one other item for us. Anything this week?
Yes, sir. This I thought was just super interesting. There's a company, and it's called Sea and Spray, which has developed a new technology for applying herbicides. It's robotic. Basically, it's run by 8 computers that they have uploaded millions of pictures into as to what the actual plant looks like. And they tested it down here in Arkansas on cotton, on a farm where they spend about $500,000 a year on herbicides and apply about 20 gallons per acre. When they did the See and Spray, it took it down to 2 gallons per acre. Can you imagine that? What the computer does is the robot actually identifies the good plant and then sprays only the weeds. And the significant thing I think about this, Todd, is that they just joined with John Deere. And Deere actually wants them to expand the technology to fertilizer because they said producers spend about $1.5 billion per year on fertilizer. I thought the motivation for this was interesting. It came about because they compared the factories from 20 years ago, which were belching contaminants, and how technology has improved that. And so they applied that to the herbicides, you know, basically better for the bottom line, better for the environment. Now if they are successful, and they haven't even started yet on working the fertilizer side of it, if they would be successful at that, you know, that would be that would take some of the pressure off of us from an environmental side, too, when you look at just agricultural in general, because I think as the years go on, we're going to have more and more pressure coming our way as the population increases and people, you know, the general people are no longer or don't really have any identification with what goes on a farm.
Amazing stuff. Hey, thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you, Todd. Have a great day.
Oh, you too. That, of course, is Jackie Vegas. She is with Stuart Peterson. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Find us online at willag.org and check out our calendar of events. I'll be busy again starting next week with the Farm Credit Illinois folks on their winter series of meetings. Mahomet, Illinois is the first one on Tuesday at 9:30 a.m. and then on Thursday at 8 a.m. in Litchfield and 12:30 p.m. in Jacksonville. And on Friday of next week, the 26th, I'll be in Vincennes at Vincennes University for their Strategic Ag Workshop. You can find all the details online at willag.org. And just look for the calendar. Well, here's a good question. Could viruses be transferred around the globe by the import of feedstuffs? Well, Dr. Scott D. of the Pipestone Veterinary Clinic of Minnesota, along with South Dakota State University and Kansas State University, have been looking into this possibility. And he suggests it could really be the case.
It looks like certain viruses live very well in feed, and they can survive simulated journeys across land and across sea. So potentially viruses like PED, may have entered the country from China through feed.
Prior to the last PED, or porcine epidemic diarrhea, outbreak in the United States, it was seen in China, and Chinese products were arriving in port at the time. PED is a disease that mostly impacts baby pigs and hog herds. Pipestone Veterinary Services D, who, by the way, will be a featured speaker at this year's Illinois Pork Expo in Springfield next month, says the virus can survive much longer than you might expect.
Extremely long. For example, our model showed ingredients contaminated, say, in Beijing, that then went to Shanghai, crossed the Pacific, entered at San Francisco, and went to Des Moines, a 37-day simulation journey, was still alive.
While the virus is not replicating during this time, he says it is able to survive in dormancy. However, it only seems to happen in certain types of feedstuffs.
One ingredient that is particularly of interest is high-protein soybean meal, where in high-protein soybean meal, we saw a great survival. In high-fat soybean meal, we didn't. So maybe there's something like protein level, fat level, could be virus-friendly or not. I'm not a nutritionist, so I'm just speculating, but it was an observation from the work.
Again, work done by both South Dakota State and Kansas State Universities. What's new here is the idea of viruses being transferred in this way. The study is just the base, and stakeholders are just starting to look at their options. If you'd like to learn more, Dr. Scott D. of Pipestone Veterinary Clinic in Minnesota will make a presentation during next month's Illinois Pork Expo. They'll be held in Springfield, February 5, 6, and 7. You can find all the details at ilpork.org. That's www.ilpork.org. This is the Closing Market Report for Wednesday afternoon. Drew Lerner is here, as usual. He's with World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City. Been traveling a lot this week about the Midwest, and I bet you're being asked more often than not about weather here in the United States, but what's been happening in South America. Argentina, I would think, would be on most farmers' minds.
Yes, I think that's exactly right, and it's really the only game in town if you're trying to get any kind of help into the marketplace. There's just not enough bad weather in Brazil, and the rest of the world is not big enough in their production to have much influence. So Argentina trying real hard to come in and help us all out. But so far, we are losing some production potential. They do have dryness issues. They've had it most of the growing season in different parts of the country. The latest news is that one of the areas that's been chronically dry all season long is in the northern part of Argentina, and they are going to start getting rain here over this next week, and actually have two fairly large systems that are going to go through that region, and it's going to end up bolstering soil moisture in a favorable way. But in the meantime, the heart of crop country and central parts of Argentina have been drying down. Now, there was an impressive rain event that occurred last night in southern Cordoba. That area had been too dry, but they picked up 1 to 4 inches of rain last night. So that's a big help for one of the most important crop areas. And the rest of the south and central parts of the country are still too dry, and we're looking for only erratic rainfall over the next 10 days, with temperatures staying a little warmer by us. So they're not out of the woods, but there are some areas that are getting a little better.
Yeah, looking forward into the growing season there, do you see any change in the pattern for South America, Argentina, and Brazil combined?
Well, for Argentina, the next 4 weeks will probably not offer any change of significance. So we'll continue limping along there. In late February and especially March, it'll turn wet, but that's going to be way too late by then. Brazil, you know, they have very good conditions right now. They're getting a good mix of weather. There's been some chatter about it being too wet in the interior south, a little dry in the northeast. But I got to tell you, I don't think either one of these areas is going to have a big enough impact on the country. Conditions are going to improve in the south, not so wet coming up, and northern areas are going to dry down a little bit more. And by northern, I'm talking about Mato Grosso right now, which is the number one soybean producing area. And that drying is absolutely perfect for maturing this crop and getting it ready for harvest. And so I think Brazil is still looking very good, despite that dryness in the far northeast and a little bit wet in the south.
Here in the United States, anything of concern?
Well, there's a lot of concern out there for if you're in the northwestern U.S. plains or Canada's prairies. Farmers are really starting to get nervous. There's hardly any snow on the ground in parts of these areas. And, of course, they're still suffering from a serious drought that occurred last summer. the prospects are not good for precipitation over the next few weeks, so they're really getting nervous in some of those areas. Like, growing season's not too terribly far away. Hard red winter wheat in the Central Plains are also too dry. There was some more winter kill that occurred there, possibly earlier this week when temperatures fell below zero without snow on the ground in parts of Kansas again. And this morning we were in the single digits all the way down to northern Texas, and I'm talking north central Texas, not even in the panhandle. So there may have been some more damage that occurred. Rain is still needed throughout hard red winter wheat country, and there is not a lot of precipitation in the pipeline. A few spits and spats, but no major storm.
That, of course, is Drew Lerner. He's with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City.